Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings early at 1 a.m., and we certainly are archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. So we also are linked to our guests, so you can get more information from them. We encourage you to do that. This is a brand new year. This is a brand new opportunity for all of us to start to take a look at where we are and where we're going. And I'm very excited here on this very first broadcast of 2015 to talk about a brave new world. That is a brave new mind. Now, that was not a slip. I intentionally said it that way because we start taking a look at living in a future science world with our guest, Elliot Maynard, a PhD, and he is all the way from Sedona, Arizona, and sort of my old stomping grounds, if you will. It's really kind of an interesting situation that I find myself in terms of kind of going back to the old roots, as it were. I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program, Elliot.
Well, thank you for having me.
My first exposure to future studies was in college, junior college, back in Phoenix, Arizona. I took a course in future studies. I think I still have the textbook. And I remember the instructor, his name was Henri. We called him Henri Connery. Mr. Connery was his name. And he introduced us, and in this book, it talked about a lot of the new inventions that would be coming. And this was back in the late 70s, early 1980s. I say it that way because some people may mistake it for the 17 or 1870s or 80s. But when I take a look back now, Elliot, at that time when I was studying this and trying to get a grip on where we might be in 15, 20, 30, 40, turn of the century, 21st century. I mean, there was such hope and optimism. There was such a wonderful feeling of, oh, is this going to be great or what? We're now here, and even though I still maintain a certain level of optimism, it ain't what I thought it was going to be. It's almost like we could have just kept the clock or the calendar in the 1900s and we'd be doing about as well, because it seems as though we're repeating a lot of the same mistakes. But you're here to talk to us about a whole new set of paradigms, a whole new set of concepts. I think the one thing that was interesting to me, Elliot, and I'd like for you to sort of expound on this idea, not the specifics, but the idea, when the events of September 11th, 2001 took place, people were telling us that we've entered a new era. We're in a whole new world. They said we lost our innocence when Kennedy was assassinated. And then when 2008 rolled around and the downturn in the economy happened, they started doing things, but they kept telling us, we've never experienced this before like this. And yet they kept doing the same old things. They kept making the same decisions as if they knew what they were doing. And we're talking about everything from our economy to the ways in which we relate to one another, our religious and our spiritual concepts. And a brave new mind living in a future science world, a lot of folks are turning to science these days, in the sense that even as a spiritual person myself, I find it fascinating what science is finding. Can we talk a little bit about what you're referring to, especially in terms of future science, the new future science world?
Yes. What I've created in this new book is a whole new operating system for humans and also planet Earth, so that they can stop this vicious cycle of kill and be killed, these cycles of empire building and destruction, all of the environmental destruction that goes with war making and all of the establishment priorities. And although our great drives have been in terms of survival, kill or be killed, competition, all of this in the past, these drives are no longer relevant to the times, the so-called ascension frequency that people talk about that we're in. So I've created a whole new operating system analogous to that we have on our computers. And essentially what this does, we now are at a position where we can no longer solve the problems that are facing us with those original parameters for survival. We need to plug in consciousness technology and really get an awareness of where humans are going.
So
and I've outlined this in the book, and the new concept is to create a whole new human consciousness. The future human I call Homo Novus.
Mm. So you're actually sort of, you didn't do it, and I was expecting you to do it, quoting Einstein's statement about how we cannot solve the problems or challenges of today with the solutions that we use that got us there.
I had it in mind. I want you to know that. And that's exactly what working in the quantum field is. You see, we just nailed something. The chances of that are pretty remote if you think about it, right?
In a manner of speaking, yes, you're absolutely right. I've been talking with people about different methods. A lot of people are choosing to go in more of a spiritual direction in terms of trying to change the world by changing themselves and again, awakening that part of them and so on and so forth. I'm talking with people who are helping others to activate a certain part of the brain that has sort of, I don't want to say it has lain dormant, but they're saying that... It's kind of like the appendix. I've talked with a few people who have no clue as to what the appendix is for, and doctors have no compunction about removing it because it doesn't do anything, or at least as far as we know, it doesn't do anything. I'm wondering about this evolutionary process of the human being. And I like your phrasing, the Homo Novus. This doesn't mean that we're going to grow extra arms for as far as our evolutionary process. This is more of an internal process. Can you take us through where this process, as you see it, is going to take place? Is it in the brain? Is it in the heart? Is it something extremely esoteric and etheric?
It's pretty simple, really. I like to bring it down to very simple terms. Essentially, the brain is not the mind. The mind exists independently of the brain, although the two are naturally connected. And the consciousness is a little bit larger term that we use often. Now, what I'm suggesting is it's no longer necessary to sit in a cave for 30 years. People have done this. They've broken the way for us, all those people that did those hours and years of dedication. I tell people simply to imagine a little switch in the mind. We've been taught by our establishment teachers, our parents, our religious teachers, our school teachers, never to believe anything we cannot prove to be true. And usually this means statistically validated. Now, if we flick that switch so that we now do not disbelieve anything we cannot prove to be true, immediately I guarantee you, your life will change. And this can be in a professional or business or very personal reference. And so this is all that's necessary to open ourselves. And again, we're focusing on the mind or the consciousness and the heart. It's always a matter of paying things forward and giving out instead of competition and destruction.
I've had the opportunity of interviewing people who are actually designing new civilizations, and I talked with the founder of the Venus Project out in Florida some years ago, and we discussed all of this. And when we got near the end of the interview, I asked him. The bottom line was, "Do you see this happening in my lifetime or yours?" And he was 94 at the time I talked with him. He says, first of all, I don't see it happening in mine, and odds are it's not going to happen in yours. And I was really kind of ticked because I really liked his ideas. So I'm wondering about your aspects of raising our consciousness. I mean, we have over, I think it's now, what, 7.5 billion? I think that's where we're at, close to it, maybe. Minds that are all going in different directions, some of them, like yours and like mine. We are wanting to create a world where it serves all of us. it benefits all of us. We're all contributing in such a way that it works, because right now it's not. Not for everyone. And I use this analogy, Doctor, that we have this very large lifeboat, and it will accommodate every single human being. We don't have to leave anybody behind, but there is one catch. The only way that you're going to come aboard this lifeboat is if you are willing to let go of the old ways of doing things. And if you're not,
absolutely,
we can't. This, go ahead.
This is why I entitled the book Brave New Mind, because it takes a certain amount of commitment and putting aside the fear of the unknown, and instead replacing that with kind of a motivation to seek new adventures, and using this quantum field technology, which is the quantum information field has always existed, and great leaders and artists of history have delved into this area when working from it, but very few of them have done this consciously. Now we have the opportunity to do this consciously, and in doing so, we can moderate and observe our own learning process. We can form coherent groups. I've worked with Jacques Fresco in the Venus Project intimately. I consider him one of the most brilliant people on the planet. He should get a Nobel Prize.
Hear, hear.
The Nobel Prizes weren't so political. Now, the problem, the only problem with Jacques, you have to realize he's about three generations behind many of us leaders.
I hear you.
And when it comes to consciousness technology, that's where Jacques hits the wall. As brilliant as he is, he does not want to open his mind the way I suggested. He's still brilliant. His designs are brilliant. And I believe that it will be consciousness technology that highlights his work and brings it into reality.
And it's interesting because I just happened to see probably about 5 months ago, I was just kind of intrigued when somebody said, talk to me about this. I just saw the first two movies of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. And I watched them with great interest, because I'm into science fiction. I'm into these new concepts and ideas. And then I watched a documentary about her. And I thought, well, I kind of like what you have to say, but you're about 4 or 5 decades too late, because we've already moved beyond this concept, these concepts that are being promoted in this woman's ideology, if you will, or philosophy. I'm not discrediting her. I'm just saying that, you know, it's kind of like what you're saying about Jacques. We have already moved farther beyond some of these earlier thinkers. And we have to be the ones, as you say, the leaders, to take their ideas and continue to modify them and continue to adapt them to this expanding consciousness that, you know, we all are looking for. You have 25 steps in your book that you talk about in terms of raising that consciousness. And you also, you've mentioned it, and I was reading here as well, about this new paradigm, this aspect of information that these artists, for example, you talked about the artists having access to it, but it's been more subconsciously, and now we're beginning the process of accessing it. Are we talking about the Akashic Records as a name to put on it?
The Akashic Records exists mainly in conjunction with certain religious groups, mainly the Buddhists and related groups. The Akashic Records are the property of no one and everyone, mm-hmm. so that if one wishes to read the Akashic Records, this also, in essence, can be accessed via the quantum information field, which is much more than an information field. It's actually a living field, and in that field, when we simply open ourselves to working with it, we become co-creators, because the field is active and it becomes our field of dreams, and we can actually manifest through conscious co-creation, conscious awareness of the learning process. Miracles will begin to happen, I guarantee it, if people will just open themselves to these possibilities and put aside that squirrel mind that wants to doubt everything immediately. Give it a chance. open yourself to the possibilities.
I often have, it used to be years ago, I used to give the warning, but it was always at the end of the interview with my guests that you need to be very careful of the things that you listen to. You've already heard this interview, so it's too late. You've heard it, now you're going to have to deal with it. I find that's an extremely important perspective in terms of this information. Now, when you're talking about this information, it makes me think of, for example, the DNA code. It is not living tissue. It is not living cells. It is just a code. It is information. That's all it is. That I don't know what uses, and this is what we're all trying to understand, uses to create who we are, and it makes up who and what we are. It's where the information goes to, I guess, create our personality and all of the different attributes of who and what we are as a human being. What about that information, and is it being affected by this information, this quantum information field?
Absolutely, and I give an example in my book in the field of what I call psychic medicine, where our high technology medicine comes together with our science comes together with consciousness tech. There is a man in India who has been very well statistically documented to hold seeds in his hand and bless them for the farmers. Now, those seeds have been planted, and statistically, the crops from those seeds have been greater. Statistically greater, 10 to 20%, I believe. The maturing time has been reduced, and also the fruit or vegetables are very, very much more nutritious. Now, what has been proven is that this man, his name is Trivedi. Again, I mention it in the book, and he has been documented as being able to transmute certain minerals and elements. He can also change DNA. Now, if one person, and I'm sure there are many more in the world, can do this, this makes it that much easier for other people to begin to look into this. Imagine what a world we could have if we could begin to shape humans and take away some of the negative and add to the positive.
You know, it reminds me of the doctor from Japan, Dr. Emoto. He just passed away, as a matter of fact, and his work with water crystals and the photographs taken of the crystals when, you know, you have certain emotions focused on them. And it sounds to me like along those lines that's kind of where we're headed, in the sense that we don't have to go through therapy and personal growth programs, if you will, or intensives in order to work through our issues. It sounds like there's a better way. There's a quicker, if you will, or a cleaner, more efficient, more effective way of doing that.
Absolutely. And because these very rigorous disciplines have been in place for hundreds and thousands of years, and people have gone through these ascetic processes of self-denial and you know, poverty and these things, they have blazed the way so that now with the higher vibrational energy, we can just simply snap into this. And again, we can do it in terms of creating paintings and books or something we love, in terms of having our families more together, in terms of creating more successful businesses and win-win situations, win-win-win situations. And in the quantum field, we can imagine win to the X power. Imagine that when it's multiplied over the global internet.
I've often been intrigued by the phrase that someone else does not have to lose for someone else to win. And of course, this, again, the concept of the win-win. And that's really what we're talking about here, is the opportunity, the real possibilities of the opportunity for everyone to get the things that they truly desire. That raises an interesting point, though. The things that we truly desire, I mean, really deep down inside at that inside at that higher level, we don't all want cars and the best cell phones and all of the stuff. It's like there is something so far beyond that that we are all wanting. Stuff just isn't going to cut it. Things are just not going to cut it, are they?
No, they're not. And one of the authors I described in my previous book calls the new cars the steel-encapsulated ego. So it's like having another body, a little mobile house to drive around, mm-hmm. and another look-at-me sort of thing, an attention-getting device in some cases. Now, over time, I have come to believe that the most precious things that we have in life that for ourselves are peace of mind, periods of having peace of mind and quiet so that we can go inward and begin to allow this interfacing with the quantum field to kind of mature as if we were dipping into the water for the first time and learning to swim. It's a similar process.
Hmm. This is fascinating, and we're going to continue talking about this. My guest is the author of Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. His name is Elliot Maynard, PhD, and he is joining us here on the program, and we're discussing this as we are into 2015, and we're very excited to be here. We hope you are too, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Tell me your stories.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and my guest is Dr. Elliot Maynard. He is the author of a number of books, including his latest, which is Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. Very excited to have him here on the program to talk about these ideas and concepts. I have been and always will be intrigued, I think, Dr. Maynard, by the whole aspect of what has been depicted as what our future will be. I mean, especially when I take a look at Star Trek, The Next Generation, especially, and some of the leaps they took. And one of the things that I've talked about on a number of occasions on this program is a concept I don't think Roddenberry maybe intended to go in this direction, but I have to touch on this and ask your opinion on, again, the concept that I am bringing about. I'm sure that you are probably at least somewhat familiar with one of the characters, a protagonist in that series, that was made up of a multiplicity of individuals who were connected at, I would say, probably the subconscious level, being told what to do as individuals. No two individuals did the same thing. And yet it was for the bigger picture, even though they didn't have a clue as individuals what that bigger picture is. Well, on a spiritual level for human beings, when we listen to that still small voice or our intuition, we're kind of doing the same thing. And I have to ask you maybe also to define for us who or what is giving us that information for each of us to carry out our individual tasks for that big picture that we can't see?
Wow, that's quite a complex question, but I'll try to unravel it here. Yeah, I believe that the best way to portray this is that we're dealing with something you might call a central force or the God force. It's the supreme information and energy flow that will power our bodies, but mainly our consciousness, and shape it in new ways so that we can now begin to really evolve into something much greater than what many people call a human condition.
Mm-hmm.
And many people, a large percentage of the population, wants to cling to the past debacles of history and bring them back into the limelight. George Carlin, the comedian, once said that one of the reasons we have so many movies about the past is that we don't have movies about the future. In other words, but we do. Through consciousness, technology, there are certain people who have this concept of future memory. This is a method to look into the future. I write about it in the book. And there are many other ways to work with this quantum field, because when you get into the quantum field, the future and the present and the past are all together. And this is why one begins to sense certain trends and they become a conviction in one's mind, in this sense. And that's how you read the future probabilities, the most likely trends that can happen.
Interesting. So going along these same lines, because the past, present, and future happening at the same time, if we can develop that area, we can certainly we can go back and take a look at, okay, well, this is where I made this mistake. I won't do that again if that situation arises again. But if the future's happening at the same time, I wonder how, if someone really had developed this, and of course we heard during the Cold War that the Soviets were developing their psychic soldiers or what have you. It seems as though there's a part of me, and I may be wrong about this, but there's a part of me that wants to hold to the belief, I don't know this, but I believe this, that it just seems that the universe would not allow for that to be used in those kinds of ways, or am I wrong that everything is up for grabs and we can use it for whatever ego-centered endeavors that we want? Or is there a certain level of protection regarding this information that it's not here to, we don't want to use it to destroy, in spite of everything we've created to try to destroy ourselves?
Well, sadly, it seems, based on history, that in the human condition, people have used information for destructive and negative purposes again and again. The invention of dynamite is one example. It was a great invention in terms of building railroads and tunnels and bridges in history when we needed those things, but also it became a foundation for war and more violence. And Alfred Nobel, who invented dynamite, is the founder of the Nobel Prize. So this is how the sword can be turned either way, into plowshares or something really negative. I like to envision the sword held up. It can be a lightning rod to attract the light and positive energies, too.
I don't really have to ask if you're optimistic about the future. Otherwise, you wouldn't be writing the books that you are and doing the kind of work that you're doing. I'm just wondering if you see us still, as some people view it, running the treadmill of feeding the machine as consumer producers into the 22nd century, or do you see some of this sort of unraveling, falling away, and that we will maybe in a more accelerated fashion over the next 40 or 50 years begin to move away from those concepts into those higher ways of living?
Well, what has happened is the church and existing establishments, including the marketing industry, have taken the religious holidays, which were based on so-called pagan rites. That little label was put on by the church de jure, and instead we've turned them into excuses for marketing. And sadly, every Christmas that comes around, the headlines involve consumers' indexes up or down. This is very sad to me that something. Now Christmas creates great stress, the Christmas New Year's holiday, for many, many people, because they feel so much peer pressure to go out and spend needlessly just for the sake of spending, and it's the thing to do. I envision that in the future, when people become more enlightened, that we will have much more heartwarming gifts and exchanges and paying it forward than we do now. This raining objects on people, especially people who are supposed to be deprived, are getting toys, and when they need other things, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And the other aspect here is, as I mentioned, we're probably at about $7.5 billion right now. You and I probably are of like mind. We are very excited about the prospects for the future, for ourselves as individuals, as well as, you know, for the human race. But we can't force anybody to do this. We can't force anybody to make those personal changes and click in, if it were. In other words, to download the new operating system. I'm wondering, is this new operating system human 2.0, or is this Earth 2.0? So what do you envision as an appropriate free will method to encourage people to step into this new operating system and into these new paradigms?
Well, we still live in a monkey see, monkey do world. So when people see that one individual is doing something that makes them very happy, that kind of energy will spread, that kind of enthusiasm will spread. We have some leaders in industry and government, a few, and also even in the military, that keep a positive attitude and somehow make lemonade out of lemons. And that small group is becoming larger and larger. The black sheep are becoming the dominant herd these days, in a sense that coherent consciousness of a few people who really know and understand, they've gained a certain amount of wisdom, has great power to change the world working with this quantum field. And the change can be almost instantly, considering our internet, our global internet now.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been sharing with my listeners for the last 3 years or so, both about my rise in high blood pressure due to, and I know exactly what it's due to, my inability to get along with the outside world, especially when driving. And I've been driving for a short time by comparison to others of my age. And I came across something quite literally just the other day that now, if I can just keep that in the forefront of my mind, I think is going to go a long way. And that is, instead of honking the horn and raising my voice and all these other things when somebody pulls out in front of me and I've got to slow my vehicle down or whatever it is that the maneuver is, I started to tell myself, be grateful for the ability to see them and not get into an incident or accident. Be grateful for the ability to be that aware that you keep yourself out of trauma and turmoil. Now I've put I've put it back on me. It's not on them anymore. It's now on me.
Well, if more people thought that way, it would be a lot easier driving on the LA freeways. I just had a dose of that about a week ago, and I was glad to get back to a strip of a mile of four-wheel drive road back in Sedona. And I won't complain about it anymore because I don't have to worry about glancing off some other steel encapsulated ego at 75 miles an hour. I just go over the bumps and don't curse. Now, this is not enlightenment or wisdom. It has a price, and that mm-hmm. is that you see more, that you see the world the way it really is. I call it the real reality show. It's not pretty. And so you have to hit your pants up and kind of shift your attitude if you want to survive. It becomes a survival imperative against a consciousness kind of thing.
But what you were saying earlier, though, leads me to believe that as you do this, let's say throwing in the concept of monkey see, monkey do, and as I have just shared with our listeners, hopefully they will start to incorporate that, then the process of getting from point A to point B may become A, less stressful, ergo your health will improve. My blood pressure's gone down. And you're going to probably get to point B, number one, unscathed, and number two, in a much better attitude to do whatever it is that you were going to do. And I mean, it will have some remarkable, and I don't know if I want to put the term miraculous, results. And that maybe that's something we might want to talk about. Define for us from your perspective, what is a miracle?
I believe that a miracle is very often a summation of maybe hundreds of tiny baby steps, and all of a sudden, kabang, something happens and you snap into a new consciousness grid. It's like you have a new upgrade in your software. And when that happens, again, it becomes a little scary because it's going into the unknown. But if you can relax, embrace the new consciousness, and go with it, and if it's a matter of road rage or a judgment, which are two of the toughest things to start working on, mm-hmm. it's a matter of setting the linear mind aside and just checking it first. And then once you see this happening, you begin to conquer this and move into the new position, just as you agreed that you have. And you have a perfect example with your blood pressure lowering on how effective this can be.
Very interesting stuff, and I want to continue talking about it here. My guest is the author of Brave New Mind. It's Dr. Elliot Maynard, and it's Living in a Future Science World. Can you give us a little bit of background on how you came to even be interested in this area, which is extremely broad in one sense, in terms of even caring about the future? I mean, you could have gone off and maybe gotten your doctorate in some other field or what have you, and gone off and just done your thing and left everybody else alone. But here, and I say this tongue in cheek, but here you're bothering everybody with these ideas and getting them to have to think and ponder these new ideas, new paradigms. What was the catalyst for you?
Well, I was always a little different as a kid. I grew up in the countryside of Maine and sometimes the seashore. I remember in the third or fourth grade, the teachers asking us, you know, they'd ask your favorite color, and then they'd ask what you want to do in the world. And I said, well, I'd like to leave a mark behind when I leave, and then I'd also like to be the person that meets the first E.T. We didn't call them E.T.s then. And the teachers, of course, I don't know how they handled that, but I devoured science fiction and still do that. And I find that this is one of the places where all of these retired aerospace engineers and people who have worked for the Defense Department are leaking out all kinds of information about the future, which they can do in fiction with no problem.
Do you think it is absolutely true that from a, I guess I'm not even sure what area of science it would be a part of, that when if we were able to time travel into the future, I mean literally physically, and we altered something, or vice versa, we go into the past and alter something, it would just irrevocably change the future from that point forward. In terms of having access to this kind of information from this quantum information field, is there, from your perspective, do you see any kind of dangers, or is it more of a very optimistic perspective about saying, hey, I've got these insights, that's what I want to see happen, so now I'm going to tap in and I'm going to do what I need to do to make that happen in the future?
Well, I believe that all of these new pathways will have their pitfalls and cow pies for us to dodge and jump over or whatever. It's just that we're supposed to be able to learn after falling on our butt at least once or twice, maybe twice. And if you don't adjust to that, you simply don't move ahead. So it's a survival imperative for an individual consciousness, a person, but not thinking about the motivated meat box we call our body, but the consciousness moving into the future and adjusting and finding a better place where there's more happiness during the day and more enjoyment and self-fulfillment for creating the future.
In terms of this whole aspect of creating the future, are there any, say, specific techniques? I mean, you know, we all want to have good things, but you know, sometimes it's hard to wrap our minds around the concept that we are where we are today from the choices that we made yesterday or in the past. So I don't want to be here today. I want to be someplace different, for those who are not happy with where they are. But we can't seem to grasp the concept of creating or making new choices to get us where we want to go. Because we feel, I guess, we're so trapped in those patterns of the past. Do you have techniques for breaking those patterns, or getting around them, through them, beyond them, over them, under them, however that process would take?
Yes, a couple of suggestions would include, due to the incredible amounts of stress and the electronic smog we're bombarded with in the cell phone towers and our phones and all of electronic appliances, we are under great pressures. And so what is important, I think, is to just keep going and realize this and find people who can facilitate us. If we have a problem, we can use an acupuncture therapist or someone to help us, and mainly find like-minded people, because there are many, many folks out there in different disciplines that you can join up with. And believe me, this provides an environment for you and the others to grow and nurture this new consciousness.
Have you tracked the evolutionary process of man in terms of his civilizations, the way he has chosen to live over a period of time, and even tracked it into the future as to what you see as far as that's concerned?
Well, I now believe that whereas one of our main survival imperatives that kept humans alive was the intuitive senses, because prior to 200-300 years ago, when the mass of humans, most of them were living in wild environments, they had to be very, very careful when they were out hunting. They had to extend their natural radar, our intuitive senses. And all of this has been kind of shut down with all of the electronic smog and all of the things we deal with and consider normal. Now, the edge we have is in consciousness technology, and I believe this is a new survival imperative that is being forced on us. It's either you get with the program or you stay with the folks on the deck of the Titanic fiddling while she slips beneath the waves.
That's an interesting analogy. Maybe that's all we can do. I've tried to live by the analogy that we're all walking up on these ladders, these very long ladders, and there's someone above me and there's someone below me. And the person above me is there to assist me if I need it to go up to the next rung. And same thing, I'm supposed to do the same thing with the person below me. But then that implies, I guess, that everybody will get to the top of the ladder and everybody will progress. But that's not necessarily the case.
Well, it's been history has proven that some of the major paradigm shifters were rewarded by being roasted over the coals, especially by the religious institutions. Think of that. How strange that is. But they, in their bravery, paved the way for us now. And now there is, I guarantee you that anytime someone tries to do something drastically different, folks who would seem to be their friends and supporters, a certain percentage are going to suddenly become irrational and will knee-jerk reaction. No, no, this is not right. And we've seen this in scientific examples of the discovery of cold fusion, etc. People behaving, professors in ivory tower universities behaving like two-year-olds simply because they couldn't handle it.
Is it your belief, too, that unless we learn from the past, we're destined to repeat it? Or is what you describe in Brave New Mind a way to bypass that and say, this isn't about repeating the past? We're creating a new future.
Yes, absolutely. This new book is a, you know, you get the card to pass go and collect your $200 and or whatever it is in Monopoly. And yes, if we are willing to leave those things behind and some of those so-called friends that turned on us, this happens again and again. And one thing I would put out to the world, that if people want to change things, don't just do a knee-jerk reaction to someone's new book or their blog. If you can't say something nice or supportive, don't say it at all, because it's only a mechanism to say, look at me, and why do you want to get down into the depths like this? Give them a little encouragement. At least listen to them and be open to their ideas. But don't shoot the messenger, because what happens is you won't get any mail anymore.
I like that. That's very good. This whole aspect of wanting to share these ideas during my Christian broadcasting phase, I used to tell people that I would gladly wear the giant red H on my chest as a heretic rather than buy into the ideas that were being purported by the institutions because they didn't make sense. It wasn't that I was being contrary. It just didn't make logical sense to me. And even in some science circles of science, I find myself feeling the same way. It's like, wait a minute, I don't care what testing you did. You didn't ask the right questions. And you tried to manipulate the participants. And what's interesting, too, and I'm sure you've heard of this before as well, doctor, is an experiment that was done repeatedly. And they kept getting different results every time until they realized the reason why they kept getting different results, because there were different people in the room at the time this was happening, and they were having an impact on the results. Just their being there, their energy was affecting the results of the experiment. And to me, that says an awful lot about us. As individuals, we're as human beings, we're pretty powerful, aren't we? And we don't even realize
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the classical experiment is called Schrödinger's cat.
Yes,
where they had a cat in a cage, and I can't remember the details, but they did come to the conclusion that finally the observers were affecting the outcome of the experiment. And this is where consciousness technology begins to really kick in, because instead of going against hard technology, we can combine the two and get the best. We can get a synergy, which is better than both. And this is what this book is all about.
I am so excited about this synergy that you speak of, because again, it is paving the way, as many are, as we talk about all the time, new paradigms for a new world, which is what Tell Me Your Story is all about, looking for those new ways of living. And I'm wanting to maybe delve a little bit more into the aspects of Brave New Mind, living in a future science world, in terms of talking about some of the various present-day aspects of our lives that either won't be there or will be there, but in a different form, and curious as to how what you see, the economic structure. I've never been so befuddled. I thought my stance regarding the religious institutions and their illogic was beyond belief. But as I've listened in the last 10 or 15 years to economic news and the highs and lows of whatever it is that you're looking at, I have never seen anything so bipolar in my life as the economy. Gas prices go up, the public goes crazy and says, no, too much, too much. Gas prices go down, public for the most part's happy, but the companies are, oh, no, this is too much. It's like, I asked the economists, what numbers would make you happy? And I get no answer. So can you help us to maybe understand what will our future economic system look like, or will it even exist?
Well, I believe that much of the structure that has been built up from old linear thinking, which was mostly industrial revolution thinking with all the war industries, etc., is breaking down. It's essentially a house of cards built on a mountain of death, as someone said. There's no future there, but people keep pumping more paper into the economy. They keep doing wannabe things and wishful things, and the economy is in such turmoil no one probably would have predicted it. And this is why we have to move into this new field of consciousness, the quantum field thinking, because this is part of what some people call again the human condition. It's kill or be killed, building up empires and collapsing. No, we're moving into a new era and these things don't work anymore, the old ways of thinking. Now we have to be brave enough to move into the new ones and learn how to survive and thrive and be really happy using these new technologies.
Now, you've used two words that I find interesting, survive and thrive. We're in that survival mode, as you've already discussed previously. And I have been wanting to talk about what it's going to be like to just thrive and enjoy the life that I don't know whether that we've been given or that we created. I haven't been able to balance that in my head yet. But nonetheless, here we are. So from your perspective, what will life be like when we're just thriving and not competing, but cooperating? It's matter of fact, I remember a statistic that one of our guests, Greg Braden, talked about in terms of the two juxtaposed concepts of competition versus cooperation, and that the level of productivity was higher within cooperation than it was within competition.
Absolutely, and this is why corporations that we're familiar with, I'll give an example of Trader Joe's, if you've been in there. The people who are working there seem basically happy. They have their products available and fresh. And if you go into that store, the reason is that those employees are getting profit sharing. They're getting motivated. This is a pretty good example of a very positive kind of synergistic environment that is created within the old matrix, but moving into the new one. And there are many other corporations that are doing this, mostly smaller corporations, because when corporations or government agencies get to a certain size, they begin to work to perpetrate their own existence. They don't want their comfort zone moved. They don't want their benefits taken away, retirement and medical and all those things. It's just natural. It happens with government, the military, the religious organizations also. And these religious organizations should be taking the lead, and they've got a wonderful golden wild card to lead the people into this new era.
And what do you see as far as organized religion in the future? Will we reach a point with this quantum information field where we go beyond belief to knowing? We don't need to believe anymore because now we just know. Our awareness.
Yes, essentially we don't need intermediaries. Although that said, again, I would encourage people to work with practitioners who will help us with certain conditions such as high blood pressure. Are the things, there are wonderful acupuncture techniques. There are so-called conscious. There's now a field called esoteric acupuncture, which doesn't only work on curing symptoms of something like high blood pressure. It now works into the future and tuning the consciousness for the present and the future. This is pretty amazing, and it's happening right under our very eyes.
To me, it's fascinating to watch these various practitioners in their I call them healing arts, and predominantly, they're just working with energy. They know how to access it. They know how to, if I may use the term, manipulate it, or maybe more accurately, to guide it where it needs to go, to facilitate the healing process on the physical level. And yet, isn't there a greater truth than that? That they are just there to facilitate our own healing of ourselves. In that aspect.
Yes, and there are a couple of things that are very important, Richard, here, that I've always maintained that doctors, be they the carpenters that do the knee surgeries and hip surgeries, or we use that term laughingly, as opposed to the alternative medical community, which work in consciousness and non-local techniques, it's important that both of those come together, because again, we can have consciousness technology working right hand in hand with surgeons to create create faster, more effective healings. And one of the other things that has happened strangely is that due to more of our medical technology, more people have experienced going to the other side. This is all about removing the fear of death and the death embargo, so-called. And they've experienced it and they've come back. Now, this experience has doubled or tripled or quadrupled in the last decade due to all the new techniques on hardcore surgery, advanced hard technology. And it's coming back now that there shall be no fear of death. What a different world it would be if children were taught from the very beginnings not to fear death, but to look at it as a graduation.
We have talked about that subject on numerous occasions on this program in terms of trying to demystify it. I've even used the comment that was shared with me. It's not something I've experienced. We've talked about, of course, near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences, which are similar, not the same, but they're similar in a fashion. And it was described to me as basically you're just taking off a big overcoat. That's all it is. You're just taking off an overcoat. There's no pain. At least that's what we hope, and so forth. And that it's just, you use the term when you talk about the car as a big steel ego machine, if you will. Well, in a manner of speaking, and I talk to people about this in terms of how many cars have you owned over the course of your driving history?
Disgustingly too many.
Probably so. But the whole purpose was to get from point A to point B, and you needed one. All right.
Yes.
Well, I don't know where point A is or point B when it comes to the physical body, but, and if we choose to believe in reincarnation, all you're doing is you're taking on a new vehicle. Your essence is the, if you will, the body that inhabits that vehicle that will take you from point A to point B as a human being. And so who knows how many of these vehicles we have changed over the millennia that we have existed.
Well, that knowledge is available through different types of practitioners, and it becomes, again, one scientist friend of mine calls the body the motivated meatbox, and people should be thinking when somebody gets to an extended age, my God, they get to leave all the aches and pains and family tragedies and all of the war memories and everything. It all gets erased and balanced out, and they get a whole new chance at life and understanding how to work with that quantum information field on a whole new level.
How relevant is knowing, and I don't know if the quantum information field contains this information, but how relevant in knowing what is on the other side of death for us? How relevant is that?
It varies with the individual, and strangely, one of the I was invited to speak to a hospice group with about a month ago, and I found that group, although I was a little bit intimidated speaking to them because I'd never worked with a group like this, they were the most open to all kinds of new information. They already seemed to know this because they had gone through the pain of either a near-death experience themselves or had someone very close to them pass away. And many of them had achieved communication and resolution on both sides, which is a very helpful solution when you have to go through this grieving process, as we do in the human realm. It's something we need to go through, just like when you get a tooth extracted, you need to wait for it to heal.
This is very interesting. Again, the book is entitled Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. My guest is Dr. Elliot Maynard, and we are so grateful for you taking time out of what I know has got to be a busy schedule, and yet at the same time, an opportunity to talk with us while relaxing in the cool confines of Sedona, Arizona. I actually was there in March of 1998, and they had their last snow for that season, and I got to tell you, that place just looked fabulous, covered in snow. love the Red Rocks, but it was just beautiful. What a wonderful, as they say, winter wonderland, even though we weren't in winter anymore. Let me ask you before we wrap up our program, my final three. Who is Elliot Maynard?
I'm just another messenger, and I'm a person that has reached a certain level of understanding by going over many speed bumps, having a number of pratfalls, and learning by my mistakes. And one of the imperatives that is an offer that we can't refuse is then, if we want to move ahead, when we gain this information and wisdom, it's a joyful imperative to share it with others, because if one person can make another person's life that much easier, that is a great gift to pay forward. And with the internet and talk shows like yourself, this thing can go quantum very, very rapidly.
I concur with that. And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
It's a joy of sharing. It's a joy of other individuals, each in their very own way, discovering how wonderful and fulfilling and happy this experience, joyful this experience can be, to have even a few moments of satisfaction, of sharing, and that kind of optimism. It'll get you through all the gloomy days we have, and we're having quite a spate of them right now.
And on the upside of that that aspect, who inspires you?
Well, I've had some very great teachers that I've been in touch with in various disciplines, and some are in organized religion, some are in the military, some are in the aerospace group. And your teachers come in various packages and surprising sometimes format. And these are the folks that, if you're listening and open, you will learn from, because they've gone through their own school of hard knocks, each one of them.
Well, I would really thank you so much for, again, taking time to share with us in this hour on this program about Brave New Mind, living in a future science world. This is fascinating, and we could go on for another hour, because I still have more questions I would love to ask you, and maybe we will make arrangements to have you back, and if you do find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to do it in studio.
Well, thank you, Richard. That's very kind of you, and it's always wonderful to get somebody who really gets it, and there's nothing more satisfying than having someone else catch your positive virus, in the sense of a consciousness opening virus. It's a good thing.
Well, I like the aspects of the new operating system. I've been wanting to F-disk my personal hard drive for decades, and I'm hoping that with the installation of this new operating system, I won't have to do that, but at least I'll have some new information and new instructions on how to move forward and thrive in this lifetime. I don't have to wait for another lifetime to come.
Well, I wish you new and amazing adventures in the quantum field, and more power to you.
Well, thank you so much. And to you, I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.